But we can start with the reports, and I'd like to welcome everyone to the March 3rd meeting of Energy, Environment, and Sustainability Committee, and ask if I was going to ask you to call the roll, but you also have to be letting people in. Should we just?
I can do both.
Okay, wonderful. Please.
Chairwoman Mana Jo Green.
Present.
Deputy Chair Gina Hansett.
Present.
Bill Erner.
Present.
Eric Stewart.
Eric, you're on mute.
And there we go.
I'm sorry, I'm present.
And Joseph Maloney, we know, is on the phone, but he is muted right now. So when he gets home, he's going to try to log on with us. So you do have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I'd like to, I guess I have called the meeting to order, and I'd like to ask Legislator Hansett to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I think probably as much as that means to all of us at any time, in these times especially. So thank you. All right. The next item on the agenda is to approve the minutes of February 3rd. And we also had a special meeting on February 9th. Can we do that as one motion? Okay, I think I saw Eric Stewart's hand, Legislator Stewart.
Oh, so moved.
And do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, any, before I call the vote, any discussion? Okay, then all in favor of approving the minutes of February 3rd and February 9th, 2022, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, motion carries 4-0 for the moment. And Legislator Maloney is listening in.
We can count.
And welcome, Tim. I would like to, you're first on the agenda. And so if you're ready, I know you just got here, but if you're ready, please give us an overview, or a report on, the UCRRA, the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency.
Yeah, I hope everyone can hear me. I think I'm having a little bit of internet connection, so I turned off my video, so it should help. Good. Okay, good. I want to start off by saying that our new recycling educator started on Tuesday. Her name is Tanisha White. She's a recent graduate of Stony Brook University, where she majored in environmental design, policy, and planning. And Angelina is going to be her direct report, her direct supervisor. And she's been, you know, training her and orientating her this week, and we're really excited. We casted a wide net, and we were very happy, actually, with all five of the candidates we interviewed. But Tanisha just brought something a little bit extra to the table. So we're excited to get working with her, and I'm sure everyone will meet her along the way. I wanted to let everybody know that Angelina and I met with the Department of the Environment, and I also spoke to Tracy Bartels separately, with regards to the reuse center. So I just wanted to let everybody know that we're in communication and we'll have comments prepared with regards to that by March 18th. So we are a part of that. All of our required reporting to the DEC for the year was completed per Charlie Whitaker. So that's all been filed. Our external audit for 1231 2021 year end. The field work has been completed. The financials, actually, I finished drafting the financials today and sent them along to our auditors. So once that is complete and I have the full audit report, I will send that along to the entire committee. We also completed our first internal audit report. That's posted to our website. And if anyone wants it, I can always forward along to you as well. It's right on the main pop-up screen once you go to our site. That covered our composting operations and ABO compliance. And then the last item I wanted to mention, Seneca Meadows, the one of our new board members, Jim Gordon, brought up at his first meeting about his concerns of Seneca Meadows closing. So I wanted to let everybody know, because it's something that's been mentioned over and over again. Seneca Meadows isn't closing. Their permit, their DEC permit, expires 12/31 of 2025. They're currently in negotiations with the towns up there, the town of Waterloo and Seneca Falls, more specifically, for a new host community benefit and to repeal their local law, which was giving them the hang up up there. And they gave us, I would say, optimism with regards to those negotiations. They are currently in the permitting process to get an extension. They're expecting that all to be complete by the fourth quarter of 2023 and shovel in ground by 2024. And they're expecting to get an additional 15 years of airspace. And that's all. Oh, I also want to, because I know there's a lot of new committee members who don't know who I am. I started at the agency in January of 2007, and I was the controller. And I've been acting as controller and executive director since July of 2020 now. And if you ever have any questions or any, you feel free to just call me directly at the office. Okay.
Thank you. And Tim, you used an abbreviation that everybody may not be familiar with, ABO.
Yeah, Authorities Budget Office. They are the regulatory authority in New York State that we report to. Part of the reason why I wanted them included in the internal audit was because they will go out and do compliance audits. So I wanted to make sure that we were prepared if that ever happens.
Okay. Let's see.
And thank you for bringing that up. So
I do the same thing and people call me on it. So I just, especially right now, as we have most of the people on the committee are new to the legislature and new to this committee. So I see your hand, Legislator Erner. You're on. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Green. And thank you, Tim. thank you, Director DeGraff. I'm about the landfill. You have probably heard in this committee and elsewhere in the legislature discussions around possibly siting a landfill around our county in the, and thank you for clarifying the situation at Seneca Meadows. I didn't realize that could still be an option. So now hearing that, I'm wondering if you have an opinion about whether we continue to make use of that facility or not, if we do have that option after the end of 2025.
Yeah, so I've actually commented on this over the past year or so. Whether or not they stay open should not change what we're looking towards doing. Long-term, short-term, we should definitely be, and there's plans for us to figure out a contingency plan in case that does happen, in case they close. But even if they open, stay open and get the extension, we could still have contingencies in place. You got to have two of everything in the garbage business. So I don't think that just because they might get the extension doesn't mean we should be relying on them. And that's not just for Ulster County. You know, that's for all of New York State. We are not the only ones that bring our garbage there. They are a massive facility.
I see that Charlie Landy, Director Landy, or Board Member Landy, put himself off of mute and put his video on. And I know this is a subject dear to your heart. Would you want to weigh in on Legislator Erner's question? And I don't mean to put you on the spot. You can pass if you'd like, but. We're not hearing you. Can you shake your head up and down or side to side if you want to speak?
So if you can't hear me, there's not too much that I can say.
Now we can. Please continue.
Okay, it's working now. Okay, there's one thing I want to say about Angie Pioni, who just recently presented us with a brochure that looks like a work of art. And it talks to the 7 R's to rethink waste. And it goes into refuse, reduce, reuse, repair, regift, recover, and recycle. And I got to tell you something. This looks like a professional job done by Walt Disney. And Angie Pioni should be commended for her efforts in this thing. I won't take too much more of your time, but it's a work of art. And if you're ever out at the agency, each and every one of you should pick up a copy of it. Thank you.
We will be meeting again soon at the legislature. So maybe somebody could leave some copies up on the 6th floor for us. And also if there's a PDF that we could preview it, that'd be great.
I'll talk to Angie about that and see if we can't do that. Yes.
And Legislator Erner, I want to say that it's costing the agency $8 million a year. And last year it went up to $9 million a year. I checked with Treasurer Landy, and that money could be going to help if we can site a landfill. And I'm very optimistic that we can if we do it well and correctly, and also create a fair post-community benefit after diverting as much waste as possible. But that money could be going to paying off the landfill, which will be an asset, and the tipping fees would be staying here instead of us having to create the pollution to export the waste and export our dollars as well. So, Legislator Stewart, please.
I'm sorry, just a point of clarification. You said it was $9 million, and that's just in transportation cost of the waste alone?
Transportation and tipping.
No, disposal. It's transportation and disposal.
Okay.
Disposal at Seneca Meadows.
Yeah.
Hi, Eric. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Charlie? It's nice to see you.
Good.
And I welcome everybody to, if you go to our website and you click on About Us and Authority's Budget Office, you'll find under financial reports all of my most recent comprehensive annual financial reports, my CAFRs. And I made it a point that in the MD&A section, the Management Discussion and Analysis, we actually reference where our tipping fee comes from, and you can see exactly per ton how much transportation is, how much disposal is, even how much our debt service costs. So it's a very good document to get an understanding just by reading the management and discussion analysis section.
Okay, I'm going to just make a couple other quick points and then call on Nick Vazda from the Department of Environment. One is that you may or may not know that Legislator Petit, Chair Bartels, myself, Europa McGovern from the Department of Environment, and we always have a liaison to UCRRA, and a few other knowledgeable people have been working on a zero waste implementation plan that is an evolution of a draft of a zero waste action plan that was created by the Recycling Oversight Committee. On March 10th, I'm going to be giving an overview of what I know, both about the zero waste implementation plan and the Reuse Innovation Center, which Nick will be talking about in a moment as he gives the Department of Environment update. And also, you know, my own take on how we can successfully site a landfill by maximum waste diversion and a fair host community benefit. And Legislator Petit and the chair of the UCRA, Catherine Beinkaffner, who is also a geologist, a hydrogeologist, and really has a lot of knowledge about what would qualify for landfill siting. And the other thing I would like to do is get on the agenda of the Supervisors Association, maybe with somebody from the agency, and really help them to understand that if it's done well, that a landfill can actually be an asset to the county and to the community. But anyway, please mark March 10th at 7 p.m. For an overview of solid waste management in Ulster County. And then also, I believe the following month, they've been speaking with Kimiko Link, who lives in Ulster County and works for EPA and is doing amazing things with waste diversion in the Virgin Islands, because Region 2 of EPA includes New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands, which is kind of a nice assignment. But what is really interesting is the amount of waste diversion and putting those materials into what is an evolving circular economy. So good things coming up that can help shape the next few years as we do try to stop exporting our waste and manage it in the best way possible within our borders. Legislator Petit, did you want to add anything before we go to direct? Is your title director or coordinator? Nick.
Director
Vazda. Did you want to add anything on March 10th or?
No, I think it's great that we're taking all of these strides moving forward and collaborating on projects like this. And, you know, I think this is also a way to get the public education out. You know, as we do all of these different venues, you know, we'll hit different groups of people. And, you know, I just keep hoping we can get there.
Okay, please, Director Vazda, please give us an update on the wonderful things that are happening in the Department of Environment.
Thank you, Chair Green. Main thing I want to report on is a couple of reports that we released this week and submitted to the committee. Two reports. First one is a report on government operations, greenhouse gas emissions, and our reduction goals. And this is a report that's described and required in Resolution 315 of 2019. And it, you know, we're looking at goals that the county has set for government operations reductions of 25% by 2025 and 80% by 2050. And both of those are tied to the year of 2012 as the baseline. So currently, as of over calendar year 2021, last year, we're at a 21.4% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions for government operations only. And I'll give the caveat that in 2020 and 2021, well, starting in 2020, we saw a major reduction, presumably due to the pandemic, a reduction in operations overall. So that seemed to continue in 2021. But despite that, I think we're on track for meeting that 25% reduction goal by 2025. And there's more detail in the report, but I'm happy to answer any questions about that when you have a chance to review it. The second report that's published is a report on the Green Fleet Law, the Sustainable Green Fleet. This is Local Law 9 of 2015. And I'll give a couple of numbers that are relevant to the amendment to that law that's being discussed tonight. The original law asked for a 5% of the fleet should consist of green vehicles by 2020. We met that goal. We're currently at 9.4% of the fleet, which is 44 vehicles across the fleet that are considered to be green vehicles, which includes hybrids of all and in all vehicle classes. And of that 9.4%, 9.1% are fully electric vehicles. So for the new goal of 20% by 2025, which is proposed, we need to purchase about an additional 50 vehicles that are green vehicles in order to meet that goal, which is a good goal and an achievable goal based on the procurement plans over the next 3 years. Both of these reports are posted on our website now and will have been submitted to the clerk of the legislature for the committee. The only other thing is, as Chair Green mentioned and Tim mentioned, the RFP draft that we've started for the Reuse Innovation Center has been circulated to various stakeholder groups, and we're expecting we requested comments back by March 18th for moving to the next step of that process. So at that point, we will compile them, see where the similarities are and the differences are, and then convene some type of meeting to discuss where those differences are and what we should do in the RFP itself.
And I want to commend the department for doing an excellent job and having an inclusive process where you're vetting it, the RFP, before it goes out. And it could be as simple as an expanded version of the reuse center that Legislator Petit so successfully developed in the town of New Paltz, or a facility that will divert any waste that can be diverted that is not currently being handled by the agency, or the agency is not going to be handling directly, and they'll have say in what that is or isn't. And whether it's a single site, whether it's a rehab of an existing building or building new, all of those questions will be incorporated into the feasibility study. And then there will be a very iterative process to answer those questions and come out with a recommendation. And my goal, what I'm hoping can happen, is we finish the feasibility study by the end of this year and actually implement next year. And that's a little bit more ambitious than the timeline for the RFP, but I really appreciate the fact that we're moving on this and not letting it sit on the shelf, because I think it's going to be really crucial for successful landfill siting and sound solid waste management. And I really hope Ulster County will model that. Okay. The next update is
Legislator Green. I saw Gina had her hand up and Mr.
I'm so sorry. Please.
That's okay. I just wanted to say that I attended the county executive, his announcement at the transit center on the 15th with the electric buses, part of the, obviously the new Green Deal, and was fortunate enough to take a ride on the bus. And I learned so much, and it was just wonderful to see something actually come to fruition like that. So everyone should be very proud of that.
And I'm even seeing electric school buses and large vehicles, you know, so it's not just personal cars anymore. Okay. Environmental Management Council.
Mr. Erner also had his hand up. I'm sorry, it's hard to see the whole screen, I know.
Okay, please. Legislator Erner.
Thank you, Chair Green. Thanks, Clerk Tantillo. Director Vazda, unfortunately, I did not manage to read the reports yet, but I look forward to doing so. And with respect to our vehicle policy, I see the proposed updates that we're going to have a hearing on if we pass it tonight. But I'm just wondering, one piece obviously is needing to ultimately eliminate fossil fuel combustion. But another piece is the general extraction and making vehicles itself necessitates. So I'm wondering whether there's any plan for the department to aim to a drawdown in terms of how many vehicles are needed in general, and not just because of the extraction itself, but the possibility that additional work under a Green New Deal might be available to workers who could have jobs that currently a machine might do, assuming that those workers wanted to do that type of work.
Sorry, I can't hear. Happy to take some of this too, because I mean, Nick and the Department of the Environment has one role here, but we have a fleet manager over at DPW as well, who kind of oversees the entirety of the fleet, not just the green portion. So I know Legislator Erner, we have plans for the county executive's kind of Green New Deal in Ulster County, which I'm kind of in charge of shepherding a little bit with Nick as well. And this is definitely something that we look at. It's gonna be a big push to do the kind of elimination of vehicles that make a huge difference. But it's definitely something that we evaluate, and when vehicles go out of kind of order, we decide whether we need to replace them or if we can shift in another direction. And Nick, I don't know if you have anything else to add to that.
I'll say that the vehicle replacement cycle is not one where we're replacing vehicles that haven't met the end of their service life. So there is understanding the embodied cost of the vehicles. We're not discarding vehicles for which the, you know, greenhouse gases have been produced excessive or without providing service to the county, I suppose. But I think I don't know what the average retirement age is, but I think it's 10 years, 15 years for a vehicle. So, and then the second thing, which we discussed briefly in the report, is that there is an assessment process that we've been working with the fleet manager to implement, where anytime a vehicle comes up for replacement, the department that's requesting the replacement to the fleet manager has to define what the use case is for the vehicle, define what the current vehicle in that use is, and then make recommendations for what type of green vehicle could replace it, coming organically out of the department. So that's, will that lead to reducing the number of vehicles? I don't know, but it's a step in that direction.
I want to mention something that came up. Some of us are working with the Ag Society and the Ulster County Fair, and trying to make the fair, help the fair become more sustainable, divert more waste, and use electricity more efficiently. And one of the suggestions that came up that we're going to move through channels is to give UCAT a heads up and see if there's any way, that's Ulster County Area Transit, a way to help festival goers, especially those that are commuting by rail or preferably by bus to New Paltz. Right now they would have to take a taxi if they don't have transportation. And the idea of giving UCAT enough lead time to see if they can help fill that void. So we are trying to promote the use of public transit and make it, that is a way of addressing the need for less vehicles. Please, Mark, go ahead.
And just on those same lines, one of the goals of kind of the Green New Deal is doing a car-free for the Ashokan Rail Trail. So getting UCAT bus to take people out there, either from the park and ride or other areas, or from Kingston.
Legislator Stewart, go ahead.
This may be a bit of a tangent, but it's definitely related regarding UCAT. I know that when I, see the bus service on 209, for example, and down in my neck of the woods, it occurs to me that there's, I'm all for using public transit, and I think UCAT is a great service, and I'm totally in favor of the three new electric buses that they've just added. But it seems to me like you might get more ridership if there were actual stops. I know so many times I see people standing on the side of the road and it's, 12 degrees outside. I'm like, that's not really conducive to making people use public transit. And I was wondering if there's any plans in UCAT's future for building bus stops where people have some shelter while they're waiting for the bus to arrive.
There are some set stops along certain, we do have some fixed routes. Now you can always flag one of the buses down wherever you're at. But there are stops. One thing I will say that we're looking at, and we were awarded phase one through NYSERDA and are on to competing for phase two, is we're looking at doing micro transit, and it would start, at least as far as the proposal, would be Kingston and Ellenville, and then those would be pilots for the rest of the county. But that would be using our partner in the proposal is VIA as like a ride share, but under UCAT, and using electric vehicles as micro transit to get either people to the routes or to get them to their location, which I think will help with ridership, not needing to have a full size bus going through the different areas, but getting people with cars to the
right. But like say, I see people like say standing on the side of 209 all the time, and it just seems to me like if there was actual, a shelter there for them to stand under if it was raining, or that would certainly perhaps make people more inclined to use the service.
Absolutely.
Okay, I would like to, if we can move on. Oh. Sorry, Legislator Maloney.
Sure. I just had a couple of quick questions. With regards to the UCAT going green, are there limitations to those buses? I've talked to UCAT drivers that say there's certain routes that have certain hills, the length of the route, that there was some real issues, even with hybrid, that these all electricals, it's not really the end all because, unless I'm wrong, that right now a large portion of UCAT routes are not even doable for electric. So when we start talking about a percentage of buses we hope to have be electric, we got to have an honest conversation about how many could even be electric with the routes they're on. Am I wrong about that?
No. I mean, right now those three buses are really meant Kingston and yeah. We're adding more and more. I think the technology will need to improve in order to have them do the Ellenville or the Poughkeepsie run, those kind of things. And certainly our infrastructure isn't there yet as far as charging stations along the route and other things.
And
it'll be over time.
But I think we got to keep that in mind. It's not something I hear us talking about enough when we're actually talking about policies that are requiring a certain percentage of these buses. I mean, how can you even talk about that if half the routes can't even use these type of buses? It's just, I mean, we're just talking about silliness at that point without having the conversation about how many routes can even have an electric bus. With regards to it being green, when I hear about the type of mining it takes for the minerals and everything else and the destruction and the carbon that's being created even to make these batteries, and then the issue that we're going to have going down the road with the disposal of these batteries, I think part of the conversation really has to be about Phil, not as much even with UCAT. I mean, we have to provide public transit, but still being smart about getting the most out of the least when it comes to vehicles. But in other departments, especially, you know, people just transporting different people, I think we have to have we have to be looking for less and less vehicles, really, when you can, from a monetary standpoint and an environmental standpoint. And lastly, and I don't just want to say these things. I hope we keep following up and find out that we're putting some time and effort into getting back to us on this. Even what Eric was just saying, I've got a bus stop right out in front of my store, and it's brutal to watch people sit out there. It's right next to a homeless shelter. Most of the people that are waiting for the bus there are from the homeless shelter in Barkley Heights. I do think it wouldn't take much. I don't think we'd have to pay for a study. I think it's probably something we could do and identify some locations that could use what you're talking about. It's also a lot of people don't want to try to flag down a bus, and sometimes people don't even know where to get the bus, and those things would make it pretty easy to figure out you could get a bus, maybe even putting something in some of these protective little areas that have the bus schedule on there. But just some thoughts. Things I hope we follow up on, and keep in mind that electric cars and buses are not necessarily the end all. It's like recycling. It does, just because we're recycling something doesn't mean there's not still a cost to the environment, and that it's reusable and compostable or much better than recycling.
You all know your districts well. If you have a suggestion on where a shelter should be placed, please feel free to send it over.
Maybe we could fire an email out to the whole legislature with that suggestion, if people, and maybe we identify 10 or 12 spots that would be something to think about.
Great.
I think that's a great idea. Thank you for that.
Legislator Petit, I think I saw your hand. No?
I did, but Deputy Ryder actually had a great response, so. Thank you for that. We should be putting up more of the bus stops. I believe the county had provided some for New Paltz, and there may have been one in Esopus. So good point, and a good point to Legislator Maloney about getting out a mass email. I think you'll get some good responses.
Excellent. Okay. If we can, please, to move on to Environmental Management Council update with Dave Haldeman, who's chair of the EMC.
Good evening. I'll make this brief. There's just a few things that I think maybe you should be aware of. One, Nick mentioned to us again at our last meeting that the Department of the Environment has a tree grant for towns within Ulster County, and there's only been one or two towns that have applied for that grant. This is for street trees or parks or whatever, and so this is just to alert you, and you can let your towns, your specific towns, know that that is out there, and that can be, the application can be reached through the Department of the Environment. The second thing that I would mention is that there are several towns, particularly along the Hudson, that are still concerned about the proposed Champlain-Hudson power line coming down through the river, and particularly those that get their water supply out of the river, how that's going to impact them, their legal and financial responsibilities, et cetera. So we're just watching that, but it's just on our radar. The other thing I would mention is that we had a great presenter last time, Judith Enck from, she was a former EPA administrator, now professor at Bennington College. She is president of an organization called Beyond Plastics. And just the two or three major concerns I think that I could pick out of that, there were many. We all know that there's a plastic problem. We all know that it's difficult to recycle anything but number one and number two plastics. We all know that the present gas and oil industry is still pushing plastic production. In fact, building large new facilities to make even newer plastics. And I mean, her focus is, of course, trying to get different types of packaging and reducing the flow of plastics into the system. But I mean, she went as far as to say that with the gas and oil companies realizing that they may be facing some decrease in that particular product because of changing over to electric vehicles and so forth, that what these companies are doing is seeing an opportunity to use more of their product in plastics. So just something to be aware of. And that information, actually, that whole presentation would be on the site of the last EMC meeting, in case anybody wants to just glance at her presentation. That's all I have.
Manager, you're muted.
I was going to ask where it would be located, but go ahead, Legislator Stewart, you.
I just wanted to thank Mr. Halderman for joining us this evening. And wow, I'm so disappointed I missed Judith Enck's presentation to the EMC. I had a question about your tree grant for the municipalities. Does that cover the installation of the trees as well, or is that just for the plantings? And kind of like what scale of trees are we talking about here?
What we have is money to purchase the trees and to provide some materials that go with it, some mulch and stakes and planting tubes, et cetera. And we're looking at, it's going to be dependent on the amount of interest compared to the budget, but we're looking at anything from a gallon bucket size up to maybe 1.5 to 2 inches diameter.
Okay. And I'm sorry, so that would be just for the trees and the related materials, but not for the labor to install?
Right. So we're targeting Arbor Day planting events, but it doesn't have to be Arbor Day. It can be any time during the year.
It can be any time. And well, I think this is a great time to be offering this service, since, I mean, the ice storm did such a number on so many trees in the area. Right. So, so great. So thank you for that. And thank you for the clarification. And Dave, I know I owe you an email, so I'll be in touch with you. So.
Okay. If we're caught up, I'd like to go to Legislator Maloney. Go ahead.
I think Laura had her hand up as well. You know, I don't know if you'll know this. I don't know if the council has looked into this. Maybe even Mark would be able to, or Nick would be able to talk about this, and it might be for something to start at the end of the meeting in new business or old business. But with the cable project that's coming down the Hudson, there's been some legislative conversation about a memorializing resolution to say, hey, let's no way on an IDA project. But does anyone have any answers as far as what is there nothing the county can do to halt this project? And I mean, and I don't know enough about it. I just want to know the options. I'm starting to look into it. I know there's a lot of people worried about it. I will say that 6, 7, 8 years ago, when these things were first being talked about, bringing power down through here, this was a lot of environmentalists thought this was the way to go. But now it seems that we have a lot of issues with it. Do we have any ability as a county to halt this or to have any say about this? Or is this a done deal and the most we can do is at least, fight a ridiculous sounding pilot through the IDA? Do we have a legal leg to stand on, or is this more or less a done deal is my basic question. Either Mark, Nick, or Dave, if you have any answers on it.
I'll answer carefully and say I don't think that – so the answer to both questions that you raised I think is no. I don't think it's a done deal, but I don't think that there's anything that the county can necessarily do and say you're not going to, you know, build this in our portion of the riverbed or whatever. Whatever we could say, I don't think we can halt it. I do think continuing to send letters, there's continuing – conversations. I don't know that it's definitely a done deal, but to answer your question,
as a county, have we looked into a county filed lawsuit, or have we actually looked into what we could legally do to halt it? Or you're just saying, you are a lawyer yourself, I believe. Are you just saying, look, I don't think the way I see this, I don't think there's any, but have we looked
just into just knowing it? Utility law kind of just it's like. It's almost like railroads, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of our purview, yeah. But.
All right. Thank you.
And there is a memorializing resolution about the pilot memorializing the IDA on our agenda.
But I will follow up with a conversation with the county attorney to make sure that they at least make sure there's nothing that they see that we can do as far as a lawsuit. But whether that's challenging, like an Article 7 EDA challenging a decision or whatever, I'll follow up with that.
All right. Can you check? Can you at least Clint, and can you also check with either Chris or David Gordon?
Yep.
And if both of their opinions are with you, then I'm very comfortable that this is more about fighting a pilot.
I'll ask Clint, I'll ask Fawn, or somebody, you know, I can't really ask for an opinion from legislative council.
Okay, so. Fawn, could you get to Dave or Chris, and then just to have two opinions and see how if they completely jive, which I assume they will. And I assume it's going to be what Mark is saying, unfortunately.
Yes, Dave.
Yeah, I just want to mention that last year sometime we had a great presentation on this whole project. And so maybe between Nick and I, we can look back and find out when that was and if anybody wants to actually view the presentation on the project itself, it should be available.
I'll put the link in the chat if I can.
I would like to move into the resolutions. I don't see any other hands.
Sorry, we don't have any chat anymore. There's no chat.
No, okay. I'll send it to you then.
All right. Let's see. Resolution number 15, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 1 of 2022, local law amending the code of the County of Ulster, Chapter 131, vehicles. And I'm just going to skip to the green fleet policy in relation to strategies and goals. And there will be, this is for setting a public hearing to be held on March 15th at 7 p.m. Is there a motion so that for discussion?
I apologize, that's the wrong date. I think this is to set the public hearing in April.
April 15th?
April 19th.
April 19th, I apologize.
Do I hear a motion for discussion? Legislator Erner followed, seconded by Legislator Stewart. Any discussion?
All right. Chairwoman Green, I know I'm like the sixth member here, but since we do have somebody here from the Department of the Environment, and since our last capital purchase of vehicles was substantially greener, would it be unprecedented to see if we couldn't get them to raise it from 20% to 30?
I think that's a great idea. Thank you, Laura.
I would ask Nick to speak to to that.
Okay. 20% is about 50 vehicles over the next 3 years. We're somewhat dependent on how many vehicles we need to and can replace each year. So that's one limitation. The other is the pool of available vehicles that could be replaced. So everything currently in the fleet that's not a heavy duty vehicle could be a viable replacement. And there are about 300 of those total that are not currently green vehicles. So increasing that number would be drawn from that pool of 300, which I think is probably at least 80% might have a viable replacement in the next year or two. I don't know if that answers your question, but
I see Legislator Maloney's hand.
I like the idea, but if we're going to honestly start collecting data and looking at maybe reducing the size of the fleet, and I just worry that if you raise that number, would you be replacing vehicles earlier just to get another green vehicle and hit that number? And like I said, if you're talking about DPW and UCAT, a large portion of their fleet is just not doable when it comes to. So I just think it's an arbitrary number. 20% is almost arbitrary once you start raising it just to drive to the word green. I think it becomes a total arbitrary number at that point, and you run the risk of maybe buying vehicles or replacing vehicles that are still good, or buying a new vehicle instead of reducing the size. So I don't know. I like it sounds good, but I didn't get an answer from Nick that made me feel like it was going to change anything.
Legislator Stewart, please.
I know that the biggest purchaser of vehicles is for the highways, but the second largest would be for law enforcement. And it seems like perhaps we could try to encourage law enforcement to, convert more of their vehicles to electric, because I understand that there's some pushback in that area. And perhaps that could be one of our priorities.
I think you worry about the same thing with DPW and UCAT, that the things that law enforcement is trying to do at times, whether it's speed or even, the reality of situations they're going to be in, green vehicles might not be, something that Juan feels like is putting the public and his people, where they need to be as far as what the capability of the vehicle is. So once again, the two largest departments, maybe the three when it comes to vehicles, all have limitations when it comes to green. So there's just a more in-depth conversation and more data, I think, that we really need to have an honest conversation about before arbitrarily saying percentages.
Okay. Deputy Ryder, I saw your hand.
I will just say that we tried to kind of not push, but tried to get the sheriff's office to buy more green vehicles, and they have agreed to buy more. But it is, again, that pursuit rated. There's not a lot of options for the pursuit rated vehicles, especially in the SUVs. And so it's difficult. I think, you know, Nick is giving deference to the committee at this point, but he and I have had these conversations. And I think his comfort level around that we're going to get to 20, I think is pretty good. When we've talked about it being higher, that comfort level is much, I will say, less as far as whether we can get there with what we should be replacing.
So I'm not hearing a strong will of the committee. I think our options are to vote on this, to amend this, to not take an action. We do have a long agenda, so I want to get a sense of the committee. We opened this for discussion. Should I just close it for a vote as is? Go ahead, Legislator Erner.
Or Deputy Chair Hansett, I think you might have had your hand up before first for me.
I'm sorry, please.
That's okay. Mr. Ryder spoke on what I was going to speak on, so he answered my question. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, Phil.
Okay. Thanks, Chair Green. I like the idea of I would not like to move ahead on this. I think the discussion is showing that we have some questions, and whatever action would enable us to discuss that and maybe reestablish some numbers or talk with different departments about uses and things like that is what I would support tonight.
Legislator Maloney.
Yeah, and just a suggestion. There are firms, I know we always talk about studies. Sometimes I agree, sometimes I don't. But there are firms that specialize in this. And when you have a fleet our size, you know, whether we could do it in-house or whether we couldn't, I don't know if we've done this recently. But it's sure a prudent thing to talk about, where you actually you get a specialized look and report on the use. What are these vehicles used for? How many people have driven them? How many take-home vehicles? How many miles per vehicle are being put on? And actually get a look. I mean, that's the only way. If you're ever really going to have an honest conversation, we're not just going to sit here and say things that sound nice, like reducing the size of your fleet for the environment and for monetary reasons, to get the most out of your fleet and to still provide the best possible services you can for your county. You really have to take an in-depth look and gather a lot of data. You have to understand there is most certainly, and this isn't anything against the executive or anyone else, but obviously you can always do better. How much better, I don't know, because I've never really taken a real look at it. But there are firms that specialize in this kind of thing. It would be something to talk about for us to get a real feel for. And this is just as much about, this is probably more about reducing the size in a smart way of the fleet rather than the green aspect. But there is a green aspect to it that you could probably draw some good conclusions from and use that when it comes to coming up with a better number. But it's something to think about. Something we could even talk about sending off to our audit committee. Our clerk does put extra funds aside in, I believe, our audit committee, and these different standing committees, I always envision going to the audit committee with an idea on something to look at and then letting the audit committee go out there and do some homework on what that would look like. It's a thought. But if we're going to have an educated conversation on our fleet, making it green, maybe reducing the size, it's going to involve more than an arbitrary number and us just saying things to Mark like we do in every meeting and hoping for the best.
All right. I see your hand, Legislator Stewart. I do want to say that I think a lot of that research was done to create this resolution. And I also want to say that I don't think there's a penalty. These are setting what we consider to be reasonable goals. Legislator Stewart?
I was just going to say, would it be possible for us to vote on the resolution as far as holding the public hearing and perhaps not get into the percentages of that we're, you know, discussing?
And listen to what comes out of the public hearing.
Exactly, yes.
All right. Our folks, thanks for the reminder that this is setting a public hearing. It is true, though, that generally once you set a public hearing, unless there's really good reason not to, then the proposed legislation does get adopted. I've just seen that pattern, but there have certainly been exceptions. So, Legislator Hanson?
Nope.
Okay.
I'll call the vote, Phil has something else to say.
All right, go ahead, Legislator Erner, and then we will call the question.
Okay, I was going to move that we postpone this, actually.
All right, there's a motion to postpone. Is there a second?
I'll second it. I actually agree with Chair Green on this, with the overall thought that most public hearings, you just go ahead and do it. But the other part of it is that becomes the norm is really not getting anything done and changing anything. And if we want to be a legislative body that's actually going to affect some real change and work with the executive in a real way and be a co-equal branch of government, I think we do need to postpone things that in the past hadn't been postponed. But then we have to go and do the work. We do have to look into if we're going to get some take a deeper dive. Let's find out if Chair Green is correct and there was a study done, then just let me see that study. But if there wasn't and we really don't have a good feel for where our fleet's at, well, who's going to do it if we don't? Let's take a deeper dive. I'm okay with the postponement. And if anyone could show me any real research and deep dives that have been taken into the logistics of our fleet, I'd love to see it and understand it.
Deputy Ryder.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine to postpone. I believe this.
It's hard to hear you.
A resolution that came from us, but and we were just trying to up. We've kind of met. I think Nick started off that we've met where the green fleet policy is. We were trying to double it. I don't have a problem having this further discussion. The only thing I ask is that, and I understand that it's March 3rd and this was just delivered on March 1st, but the Department of the Environment did a phenomenal job on putting together the 2021 Ulster County Green Fleet Report. And it's about 17 pages of statistics and I think things that you all are looking for in this discussion. And it should have been delivered to you on Tuesday, I believe it was. And it should be circulating now, so I would just recommend everybody read it.
So right now, the motion is, the resolution is for April, setting a public hearing for April 19th. We will be meeting before then, but I think we would need to set the public hearing now and have the discussion in at the April meeting if there was further discussion. I don't know. Can we set the public hearing in April for April 19th?
Theoretically, you can. We normally you couldn't because it would have to go to the legislature for a vote. This is a resolution, so you couldn't set it for you can hold a public hearing and vote on something the same night, but if the public hearing's before the vote, but this you always have to set the public hearing a month ahead.
So again, this is for a public hearing. There's a motion.
Who put this in? This is from the executive, or
no? It's from Eve Walter and Peter Chris.
Okay.
As well.
Neither of which are here, and there's a motion and a second for a postponement, and And we did get it pretty late. I think it's time to vote.
Okay, all in favor of the motion to postpone?
Aye.
I see 2-3. Okay, all opposed? Okay, so by a vote of 3-2, this resolution number 15 is postponed. Okay, the next resolution, appointing an independent administrative hearing officer pursuant to the code for the County of Ulster. I believe that there was some late information about the possibility of using a hearing officer that the county already uses.
Are we going to open it for discussion?
Yes.
You should move.
All right, let's move in second for discussion.
One.
Motion by Legislator Maloney, seconded by.
Second.
Erner.
Legislator Erner, and I saw Legislator Petit had her hand.
I did, thank you. Just as a reminder, the position of a hearing officer was created back in 2008 or 2009 when the Resource Recovery Agency had been asked to hire a compliance officer. It had been rewritten into our recycling oversight and our source separation and recycling laws. We at that time appointed Lou Klein, who, I mean, as far as I know, may even still be in the position. He's on the periodic review board. However, Al Bruno, a legislator from a previous term, had reached out, and that's why this resolution's been brought forward to reappoint somebody. It is already in the code books. It's 304-25. It spells everything out in our code. So essentially, we just need to put someone in there. The current person who is working with the Board of Health is George Redder. He has experience in, you know, these sanitation and these type of law topics. Our legislative counsel, Chris Rigucci, had reached out, but apparently Mr. Redder's on vacation. So I would appreciate it being moved forward. It was postponed last month, so we could check into it a little bit further. And those are all the details, which were, and again, I apologize, forwarded to you a little bit later this afternoon.
Does anyone else have any comments? Yes, Legislator Maloney.
Part of the postponement was there was discussion about a different way to do it and whether we wanted to kind of put them into put this position in with a pool of what we already have, judges in the county for I think the health department, other things as well. I think Chair Green, you actually expressed concern about that, saying then you're losing kind of an expertise. Like I got the feeling that you wanted one person that was going to understand environmental law, recycling, and not just from some pool of judges. So that was that was the main reason that it got held up. So Laura really dove in and decided that the existing language and to have kind of a separate person with some expertise there was the way to go. So we kind of went with our original thought. This was something asked for. Maybe Charles Landy could maybe speak to this, but this was something that was asked for publicly in an article I had read a couple of months ago. I brought it to Laura, and that's where this kind of started to happen again, where Laura researched and found that we had the existing resolution. It was set up. All we had to do was put it up and fill it. But this was something that the RRA was asking for.
Joe?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, the RRA is in favor of this, and it appears as though finally flow control law is going to get some teeth, and they're looking forward to it. And so that's basically, and that comes from the agency, people who are in the know, and compliance officers who know how frustrating it is to run people down who are breaking the law and then not have any avenue of approach. So basically that's what it is. Thanks, Joe.
I do want to say that I can't find this in my packet of resolutions, but if somebody else has it pulled up, is there a person named? And if not, then do we want to wait until we actually decide on who this is? Because if we're going to be appointing a hearing officer, then I think we should know who that is, or specify how it's going to be filled. And I tried to look at the backup and I can't find it. So go ahead, Legislator Erner, and then Legislator Petit.
Oh, go ahead, Legislator Petit.
I was just going to say we have done other TBDs. We do have someone in mind. It's just a matter of him getting back on Monday. So, Chris Ragucci had reached out to him. So, and there is an existing contract with him. It would just be coming out of a different budget line. It wouldn't be obviously coming out of the health department budget line.
So if it's a TBD, we could fill it by amendment on the floor. Are folks comfortable with that?
We were.
Yes.
Yes. All right. So on resolution number 18, appointing an independent hearing officer, I'd like to, if there's no further discussion, I'd like to call the question. All in favor, please signify.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion carries. All right. Resolution number 147, adopting and issuing a negative.
Oh, 109.
Oh, thank you. Urging the New York State to increase the Hudson River Estuary Management line item in the Environmental Protection Fund by $2 million. And I want to just say, I was on a meeting this morning, a long meeting of the Hudson River Estuary Management Action Council. And Nancy Beard is retiring after 34 years now. And Fran Dunwell is retiring this summer after 34 years. And they retrace the history. And it started as, I think, $100,000 enterprise that Fran Dunwell was director of, appointed by George Pataki, Governor Pataki. And it has grown in so many ways. And Nick touched on some of the projects that they have sponsored. So it really is an amazing program. And I'd like to take a motion to consider resolution number 109. Do I have a motion?
Motion.
Legislator Erner and a second? Legislator Hansen. Any discussion? Then I'd like to call the question on all in favor of the resolution to increase the line item for the Hudson River Estuary Management Program. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, motion carries 5-0. And now resolution number 147, adopting and issuing a negative declaration under the state secret law by the county Ulster, by the Ulster County Legislature for the construction of a veterans cemetery to be located at 181 Plains Road in New Paltz. This comes from the Veterans Service Agency. Do I hear a motion for a discussion?
So moved.
Legislator Stewart seconded. I need a second. Okay, Legislator Hansett. All right, for discussion. The Veterans Center. Yes, Legislator Roehner.
Thank you. I've come very late to this whole thing, and we passed it through health. I'm just wondering if anyone here was who was part of the environmental review that our county had done could give a really brief summary of how that went, like 15, I don't know, like the elevator speech about it, just so that I could understand a little bit more before voting. That's all.
Yeah, so our planning department does the neg decks, and unfortunately, Planner Doyle is not here, but I will say that this project has gone through a large environmental process. At one point, we did a phase one investigation, and it turned up that there was some artifacts significant to Native Nations. And so we hired a consultant and did some of the like laser drilling down and seeing what was there, and really got a map and made sure that there was no human remains, et cetera, in the area that we were planning on creating this new veterans cemetery. Everything came back that it was okay. And we've been working with representatives of the Native Nations, and they've signed off, and we've gotten all the state agencies to sign off. We have a veteran cemetery at the New Paltz Rural Cemetery. Unfortunately, we are running out of space there. This is across the street. And the location where it's at, has been examined, and that's, I guess, your elevator speech. I can't go further. If there's other questions, I can bring them back to Dennis.
Legislator Stewart.
I just had a couple of real quick questions. I mean, first of all, I mean, I looked at all the background materials, and I think the design looks really awesome. And there was obviously a lot of environmental, research done. I had a couple of questions. The first one being fencing. Is there a fence to be around this area or not? I didn't see that in the drawings. I wasn't sure.
And I'm not aware of. I'll have to follow up.
Okay. Because if there was going to be fencing, I was going to request that it be one of those wildlife-friendly fencings like they put up around solar farms, that allow small animals to go under the fence, every 50 feet or 100 feet or whatever the regulation is. That was one concern. I know the county does not use herbicides, and that was, I saw that in the documentation. And I was wondering if there are plans to use pesticides at this site. I mean, I only saw herbicides mentioned.
No, I believe that's part of the policy. Nick, you can confirm. I mean, I think the same policy that prohibits herbicides would also prohibit pesticides?
I believe so, yeah. Not pest management, yeah.
Great.
And I'm asking Dennis, I don't believe there's a fence, but I will note the request that if there is fencing, that it be wildlife safe.
Excellent, thank you for that. Also, I ran a landscaping company for like 15 years. So I was curious, the plantings that are going to be specified, I was wondering if we could if we could specify that they use native plantings whenever possible, or is that the county's general policy? I just wasn't sure.
Yeah, I can. We can specify that in the bids, and I believe that that is. I don't know if there's a policy on the books, but that right. is the kind of the procedure that DPW would go with would be native preference.
Great. Well, that's really good to hear. Also, my final question was the use of local contractors on projects like this. Is the county able to specify that the landscape architects use or that the county, you know, uses local companies or how does that work?
Not on bids. It's the state prohibits us giving a local preference. Now, if it was a larger project, sometimes we do project labor agreements, which will ensure that we're using local labor. But
right.
I don't anticipate that this is going to be of that size.
Okay. Well, like I said, I thought the drawings looked really, really great. So I thought it was really aesthetic, and I think it's a good thing. So thank you.
And Dennis just said that the only fence is in areas that are not to be disturbed. So I am following up with him to just make sure it's wildlife safe.
Great. Thank you for that.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. I'd like to call the question. All in favor of resolution number 147 regarding the neg deck for the Veterans Cemetery on Plains Road. All in favor, please signify.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Legislator Maloney, I was looking down. Did you also raise your hand? Yes. Okay. Very good. Motion carries 5-0. And on to resolution number 154, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a payment in lieu of with Pioneer PV LLC for the solar energy system pursuant to real property, tax law. Section 497, and this comes from the Department of Finance. And this is indeed what we have referred to as a reverse pilot, in that solar arrays, the landowners where a solar array is installed are exempt for, I believe it's 15 years. And because they are using services, NYSERDA has a formula by which they recommend that a payment in lieu of taxes be made instead of exempted. I hope I explained that correctly. And before I call on you, I did see, I think Deputy Ryder wanted to speak, and then Legislator Maloney.
There was new members, and so I wanted to give a similar explanation than you gave, but I think you did it well. The only thing I'll caution is, like, I don't call it a reverse pilot because that makes it seem like we're paying people. It is the fact that the taxes are exempt, and this is the only way that we or the towns get any real property tax from it. So in some ways, you're right, it's reversed, but we're not really benefiting the solar provider. They're paying us something. So.
Right. Okay. Legislator Maloney and then Legislator Erner.
A couple of quick questions. Mark, I remember this. I actually called Phil today after his email to let him know, because it is very confusing. I thought the same thing when you see pilot. And then a couple of years ago, we all learned about these kind of reverse pilots. But who negotiates? Not every reverse pilot. I know it's the wrong, it's inaccurate, but just for the point of getting through this, who negotiates what they are going to end up paying that comes up with the number?
The town is the initial body that negotiates, but as Chair Green said, there is a formula set up by NYSERDA based on megawatts.
And are we going with that formula on this? And what? How many, give me a guesstimate, how many reverse pilots do we have right now going? A lot. I mean, now being back just in two plus years, I've probably voted to approve 10. I don't know. But do you know how many we have off the top of your head, or about how many?
It would be a guess. I will say it slowed down from 2 years ago when you were here prior. Like, I don't remember seeing a lot, and Chair Green's nodding her head, but I don't remember seeing a lot in the last session. But I can get Bert by ways and means to have a number, of how many we have.
Thank you. And maybe we could run, I'll talk to our budget staff about that. I would just be curious to run a report and see what the recommendation was from the chart that NYSERDA gives us and what it is and whether it always matches that. You know, what I worry about is some towns maybe not doing a great job of negotiating as well as they could and getting all they could out of a project, and other towns doing a better job. I don't know who's doing the negotiation. That also sounds a little gray, because you said there is an aspect of it that we do. But who is setting that? And who is making sure that everybody's being treated equally?
I'm going to go to.
I guess we'll have to run that. I'll talk to our budget staff. They may be contacting you guys. It's going to be pretty easy, I think, to put something like that together, just to give us a chart to look at, and you know, trust but verify. Let's make sure we're doing the best we can for the taxpayer.
I see all the hands. The order, I think I saw them, was Legislator Erner, Legislator Petit, and then. Where'd he go? Legislator Stewart bounces around.
And do you want to have someone move this and second it for discussion?
Okay, let's do that.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, that was Legislator Maloney, seconded by Legislator Erner. And I would like to recognize Legislator Erner to speak on this resolution.
Thank you, Chair Green. So when I first was reading the materials for this, that's when I was I looked up the state law about the pilots and exemption for this type of project, which I guess is permissive. And so I learned that our county has the option to tax the land normally or not by statute, I guess. And we've elected not to. And then so we're asking for a pilot here. Precisely because they're making money from their project, and so they should pay some tax. I assume that's the reason we're doing it. But then this late this morning, I got an email which all the committee has I've forwarded to you with concerns about the cutting of trees from the project, and also possible definite proximity to the city of Kingston drinking water. And I haven't had time to follow up on that aspect of it. And so I would like for us to be able to take our cut of revenue from this, I don't feel comfortable moving ahead without knowing more about the project and those potential impacts. So I would actually like to, with the chair's permission after others speak, but make a motion that we postpone this.
I saw a lot of other hands, but is there a second to the motion to postpone?
I'd second it.
Thank you, Legislator Stewart. All in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Okay. Yes, Deputy Ryder.
You voted to postpone it, and that's fine, but I just want to speak to one thing that, regardless of whether this passes, we don't have an ability to stop this project, because that's through the town, that's through the municipal government where the project is. And so we don't have an approval process on whether this project.
If I could respond to that real quick, I was certainly aware of that. But the point is, and I think we need to do more of these things only if we're going to follow up and follow through, not just to hold things up, but to actually follow up. But this is what could happen. The town is now going to hear, the municipality is going to hear that this was held up and we have questions about it for environmental reasons. The next time that municipality has this in front of their zoning or planning board, perhaps they will start to think about our concerns. So I realize, and we might even be costing ourselves a couple of tax dollars for a second, but I like that approach. There's a reason these things come before us, and I understand that we're not holding this project up, but we might be making the next project better by keeping this conversation going and having the municipality realize somebody is watching. The legislature is watching what we're doing, and they're pointing out some things that could have been done better, possibly. So I like holding it up. I like finding out more, and I hope there's a butterfly effect to this that's positive for the environment.
I have something I want to say, but go ahead, Legislator Stewart.
Oh, I was just going to second basically everything that Legislator Maloney just said. I mean, I agree totally. In general, I'm a huge proponent of solar energy, but I think that clear cutting acres of woodland to put up a solar farm is a terrible idea. The town of Marbletown, for example, where I served on the town board for 4 years, in their solar law, they prohibit that specifically. They also prohibit in that same solar law putting solar farms on prime farmland, which is something else that I think is something that should not be done. So in addition to leveling the forest, I think it's, there's concerns about runoff coming from solar panels and being right next to the reservoir. I mean, I just think it's kind of environmentally a terrible idea all around. So, I understand how we're unable to stop this project, but like I said, I agree with everything that Joe just said. So thank you.
I'm going to just say what I was going to say and then call on you, Laura. I think this is a very important issue that is being addressed. And I see Dave Haldeman and Legislator Petit have just signed up for the solar mapping project that we are doing, and it would have probably prevented this project. It's smack in the middle of it's a core forest in the middle of forest edges, unless I could be convinced otherwise, there have got to be better sites. And I think what's been happening is that developers are looking for open space and sort of taking advantage of the fact that municipalities are not that savvy about what they need to look at to promote a space or to avoid or protect a space, and everything in between. And the solar mapping tool that was designed by Scenic Hudson and is being used. This is actually, we had a cohort in the fall of 12 municipalities. And I think this time we have somewhere around 15 or 17, I haven't completed the count, that are being representative, where people from the municipality are learning how to use a tool that has layers so you can see where wetlands are that you want to protect, where prime farmland is, where forests are. And as was made clear, this is not about approving or disapproving of the project, but I see this as a classic example of why we need municipalities to have these tools available to them. And I even think that if it's possible, that the executive branch could do a look before we get a pilot. The pilots go to Public Works and to Energy and Environment and Sustainability. So I do think that that screening should be done initially by the municipality before it ever gets to this point. But I, you know, it's similar to the checklist that's been developed. But that I just want to put a plug in for that tool because the person that I worked with in Rosendale to look at our municipality within 5 minutes was able to find the parcel, find the layers that really should have disqualified this project. And what she wasn't clear on was which body of water the author of the letter was talking about, whether it was Kingston's Reservoir or the Ashokan. It's at quite a distance, but I want to look more closely at that and maybe even give the town feedback if it's really as inappropriate as it looks. And believe me, I want to promote solar, but I want it to be done wisely. Okay, Legislator Maloney.
Quick question to you. This checklist you're talking about, who is going to be using that?
The checklist is...
that you're referring to, I'm just asking for clarity.
It's... I'm going to ask Deputy Ryder to answer who actually fills out the checklist. It comes to me and to Public Works.
So last session, there was a requirement. Nick had created a checklist for capital projects. Last session... there was a resolution passed that we requiring us to submit this checklist that's done between Nick and DPW for every capital project.
All right, thank you.
And now we're required to submit it 2 weeks prior to submitting a resolution to you all creating a capital project.
What, just food for thought, what if we required this a solar checklist like this for all municipalities? It's law that they have to, that these reverse pilots have to come through. If we can't mandate it, we can suggest it, send it off to all the municipalities. It kind of forces them, and we should look into whether we can mandate that we might not be able to mandate that. We're under different, you know, their home rule and we're an extension of the state, but it could be a suggestion that we send out to all municipalities, and they will know that when they put in for what we're calling reverse pilots tonight, that this checklist we want accompanied, and it kind of forces the municipality to start looking at it this way, or they might not get these taxes if the legislature doesn't like the environmental impacts of the solar array that they just allowed. So it'll force them to be a little more responsible with their planning, zoning, with approvals, and maybe make them a little more aware of what they should be looking at. I've talked to a lot of supervisors. There are supervisors like Mike Baden, who I have all the respect for in the world and trust that he is doing this on his own. But I have talked to other supervisors that this is not crossing their mind, and this will force it to cross their mind.
Legislator Erna, and then Legislator Stewart.
Thank you, Chair Green. I just wanted to answer one of your questions. It's by the Binnewater Reservoir.
It's by the which?
The Binnewater. That's where this project would be, but beside Kingston's Binnewater Reservoir.
Okay, I'll look for that. And it seemed to me that I did see a smaller water body off to the east when I looked on the map, but I wasn't sure whether that was a drinking water supply. And I will look carefully at that. Thank you. And Legislator Stewart.
Very quickly, I just wanted to second what Legislator Maloney said. I think it's important for the county, this committee, to step in when a municipality we see is doing something egregious. I mean, obviously some of the towns are far more environmentally minded than others. And I think it's our job to make the ones who are less environmentally minded to be more so. So thank you.
And we'll be repeating this training again in the fall. And, you know, between now and then, again, we hope to go to the Supervisors Association. And I will say the planning departments were very helpful in getting the word out. And I think we have 30 people registered from, I believe it's 17 municipalities. So by the end of this 5-week, it's a 10-week session. It's 5 sessions every other week for 10 weeks. By mid-May, we will have essentially, you know, close to 30 municipalities trained to use a tool that promotes wise solar siting and changes them from being recipients of proposals to actually becoming proactive and developing solar in their community, both on their own municipal properties, but by encouraging sites that are ideal for solar, or at least good for solar, and letting people know if a project is proposed that would do essentially more harm than good if you're going to be taking out trees, which draw down and sequester greenhouse gases. If you're going to be taking those out to put solar in, it's really not a fair trade-off. And also we do have farmland to protect, and we do have wetlands and other resources and historic resources. So anyway,
Chair, Mr. Haldeman has his hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please go ahead, Dave.
Just in January, George Profus from the Department of the DEC, Department of Forestry, was our presenter. And if I recall correctly, he was saying that the goal from the Department of Forestry standpoint is anytime you're in a forested area and you're going to allow for a development in there, you want to try to preserve as close to 40% of the trees as possible. I just passed that on to you.
To leave 40% of the trees in the area?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a lot to be done in this regard. Please. Deputy Ryder.
I don't want to prolong. I just request that we are able to see the letter that has been circulated. It help us out to know what the complaints about this project are. Thank you.
I'll send that right away.
And, you know, I did what I could between this morning and now to verify it. And we used the tool. I was driving and I asked Penny to take a look, but it's a really valuable tool. And, you know, I'm hoping that the Department of Environment will take a look at it if you haven't already, because, you know, it's actually a tool that can have many applications, but it's particularly designed for solar siting. All right. If I'm not mistaken, we agreed to postpone. Is that the action we took?
Yes, you voted on that already. It's postponed.
Okay. And
I would just update you that Resolution 108, for any of you that didn't know, was passed unanimously at the Economic Development Committee, but I'm sure you want to, it's not for you to vote on tonight, but it's on your agenda for your discussion.
Okay. And that's resolution number 108?
Yes, ma'am.
Urging the Ulster County Industrial Development Agency, UCEDA, to deny Transmission Developers, TDI, payment in lieu of taxes for the Champlain-Hudson Power Express in the county. And what I'd like to ask is that we focus on the fact that this is a pilot agreement. And I would request that we don't spend, it could easily be an hour or so, debating the pros and cons of the Champlain Hudson Power Express, Chippy, as it's called. I do know that in my day job, I work for Clearwater, and there were such strong feelings, pro and con, that all we could do is make some recommendations for studies and so forth. And, you know, honestly, I'm going to say if Clearwater couldn't take a position, I'd be surprised if this committee can. But I do think it's important to focus on the request, which is a pilot agreement. And so I request that the comments be focused on whether or not it makes sense to issue a pilot on this project. Any comments?
Did we open for discussion?
Yeah, and Fawn, did I understand you that we are not to vote on this resolution?
That's correct. This resolution has already been passed and it's going to the floor at this point. You are not listed on this resolution as a committee for approval, but Vicki asked me to put it on here for your discussion, just for okay. you to make sure you're all aware of it.
All right. I see Legislator Maloney's hand, and was somebody else starting to speak? All right, we'll go from Legislator Maloney.
I don't think anyone that knows anything about the IDA and their mandate in general municipal law sees we're a project that's already started and has very little, gain for the county. I'd be shocked if this wasn't dead on arrival, but I'm totally supportive of trying to make sure that we're watching and we have our big concerns about this pilot. Secondly, just Chair, for your own protection, did you just start out by saying you were working on this in your day job? I think you got to be careful and maybe get Chris or David's opinion whether or not you should abstain or not. And it's not, like you said, this is a memorializing resolution. I think it's going to pass, but just,
As a matter of fact, I think your point is well taken, and I would ask Deputy Chair Hansett, I should have thought of this ahead of time and prepared you, but would you lead this discussion, and I will stay out of it because it is an issue that Clearwater has taken up, and I rather err on the side of caution.
Absolutely. So is there any discussion on this resolution? Again, it is only discussion. We're not voting on it, but does anyone have anything? Okay. Legislator Stewart?
I was just going to say, I don't see how this benefits the county, and I think environmentally it sounds horrible. So those are my comments.
Thank you. I can't see everybody here, but let me go down.
Deputy Executive Ryder has his hand up.
Yes.
The only point I want to make is that I would be careful with assumptions on what the IDA would do, because I believe almost every county IDA up and down the Hudson has given this project a pilot. If you just Google CHPE and pilot, you will see a slew of news articles with IDAs giving pilots. So, I mean, I think if you want to prevent a pilot, this is a smart memorializing resolution.
Mark, thanks for that. And that's insane to me. But I've talked to former members of our own IDA, and I mean, nobody thinks it's appropriate, but that is, it's insanity.
That's very interesting.
So even better yet, Phil, for this.
I believe this is the only section where it goes in the river, though, too, right?
It only comes out of the river that I know of around Haverstraw. It's in the river from basically from Canada to Haverstraw, comes up out around and then goes back into the river and crosses down to Yonkers.
Legislator Erner, did you have your hand up?
Yes, I did. Deputy Chair Hanson, thank you. As you all know, I'm a co-sponsor of this and have made comments in various public forums, but just as this being my, I understand why it's not in our committee, but as one of my home committees, and I just want to say that I had lived in a community in Dutchess County that had a similar story where the a pilot was proposed for what folks for a power project that did not provide any real substantial benefit to the community, and this is something we're going to keep seeing until we live in a different society that I'm hoping we're helping to build here in this body. But to be honest, it's something we just have to be vigilant about for the time being. And there's no justification for us giving away money. So I'll just
leave it at that. Giving away money to wreck our environment. Exactly.
Legislator Petit.
Thank you. And thank you, Legislator Maloney and Legislator Erner, for sponsoring this along with Legislator Hansett. And I'm hoping we get everybody else to sign on. It's, it surprises me. And thank you, Deputy Ryder, for telling us that every IDA up and down has approved this. I thought, silly me, IDAs were supposed to reward, even though a lot of it is welfare for the rich. Organizations that were coming in and making improvements to the community and hiring permanent jobs and all this other great stuff. These folks are probably a billion-dollar company. They're doing extensive damage by digging 7-foot, 8-foot trenches. One of them is going to be 50 to 100 feet from our Sopus water intake. They're saying the turbidity should die down after 4 days. We don't even know if our water tank can hold 4 days worth of water. And that's if the turbidity dies down. And, as we know, because GE was allowed to do what they wanted, a lot of the silt on the bottom of the Hudson has got, PCBs in it. So, again, if anything, this company should be offering us a host community benefit for the impacts it's going to have on us, our drinking water supply, and our environment. They did it on Plattsburgh when they put in that hydroelectric plant. And, in return, Plattsburgh Electric is very low. So I really support this resolution.
and real quick, what about this project wouldn't happen without a pilot? It's insane. That's the whole point of the IDA ultimately, is to create jobs that wouldn't be created if not for this tax benefit. It's just insane that on its face.
And if we're still looking for signatories for this, I would like to include my name too.
Thank you. And Deputy Director Ryder?
If I could just clarify my comments, I should say many IDAs have approved. I can't say that every single one. I did say that. But there have been many IDAs that have approved this. And you can just kind of do a Google News search.
Thank you for that clarification. Anybody else?
Point of information, Legislator Stewart, I think you're on there already and on the.
Oh, excellent!
I have.
Okay.
Thank you for that, Legislator Erner.
All right, Chairwoman. I think that was. I don't think there's any more comments on this.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, any new business? Yes, please.
Senator Maloney. Yeah, something we postponed in health is something that is quite environmental as well. And anybody that wasn't at the meeting, Laura and I have put up a mandate on all the large pharmacies for a drug drop-off box. It was something the state kind of wanted to do and then kind of backed out of it and left a kind of an opening for the pharmacies to get around it in their 2019 law. And they gave them, they made it an option, basically. They said you have to have a plan to get rid of medication, old medication. And one of the things you can do is a drug drop-off box. One of the things you can do is provide a $2 envelope that people can put one thing that no one's doing. Besides a lot of, especially young people, first getting addicted on opioids by an old control med in the cabinet of a family member or something, it certainly does that. But there's a lot of environmental data out there about these medications now being flushed or thrown out and buried and leaching into water, and they're testing the fish and everything else and finding certain levels. It's really not, I think this is just as environmental as it is good for the drug problem that we're, the addiction problem that we're having. So that's coming down the line. So what we're doing is basically mandating it for the big pharmacies. There will be discussion about another one, maybe providing and helping the smaller pharmacies. But I don't know if anyone had any questions. We got to clean up the language. There's a couple of things. There was very legal because the state, we are building upon what the state did. So there's a lot of legal language in there that we had to, some of it cut and paste, some of it move out. So, it needs to be cleaned up a little, but the basics are there. And I've talked to some lawyers up in Albany from the health department. We worked with Chris Ragucci on this and he feels very comfortable with it. And, I think this is something that we may even see other counties do once we do it. I think we might be the first county to build upon what the state did and outright mandated in New York. It's been done in other places, but I think it makes a lot of sense. It doesn't cost that much money. And, the pharmaceutical manufacturers will be paying for any cost that's in the state law. So the pharmacies go to the state knows the breakdown of what their percentage of the market is in New York State, and they kind of bill Pfizer and everyone else. So it's kind of a cool thing that way, though it was a lot more to add into the language of the resolution.
Go ahead, Legislator Stewart. No? Okay. I do want to say that I see your hand.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, I think it's a great idea. There's one concern that I had. I was wondering if that had been addressed, and that was issues of security. I could see how perhaps these boxes could be subject to theft or, for people trying to get the drugs that are inside. I was just wondering if that concern had been addressed.
Right. These boxes are made to be impenetrable. They're like mail slots. Right. Once you put it in, there's no getting, or when you drop money off at an outside thing at a bank, so that I have not heard being an issue. And they're on camera inside the pharmacy, usually right near where the pharmacy is. Or where the pharmacists are. So I have not, it's a thought that I had, but it was quickly made comfortable.
Great. Thank you for that.
All right. Let's see. Legislator Hansett and then Legislator Erner. Thank you for being patient, Legislator Erner.
Legislator Maloney, thank you very much for that. That is very important. And I think because a lot of places right now where people can bring their prescriptions or whatever are the police departments, but some people aren't comfortable going into them. So I think this is much needed. I know my husband went through, I had chemo drugs here, and I had during COVID such a hard time finding a place, and he was a diabetic, that would take certain things. So hats off. Thank you.
Legislator Erner.
Sure. Yeah, on this one, we voted to postpone. We heard some things about alternatives like bags that can destroy it, but then what happens to the substance in the bag? And if the bag can work, that seems like a great idea to have it distributed along with the medication in the first place. But in general, I feel confident that we're going to clean up the language and get this moving. So thank you, legislators Maloney and I guess Laura left, but thank you. I had another topic I wanted to just bring up, if I might.
Can I just say something on this topic before you do? And that is that there is new state legislation on what's called emergent contaminants, and drinking water supplies have to be testing for various different contaminants that can get into drinking water. And if these things are just flushed down the toilet, they often pass through water treatment facilities and do get into the water and can, at minimum, there's a cartoon of a fish drinking a cup of coffee in the morning because so many people put caffeine through the wastewater treatment facility. So having this proper disposal is really valuable. Please go on to your next topic.
Thank you, Chair. And this relates to an email that I sent out very late. So I'm just going to mention a couple key points and see if folks want to have any discussion or not. I know it's late, but when after the ice storm, we kind of jumped right back into business, and I would have liked to, and so maybe this is my opportunity to just pause for a moment and some lessons that I think pertain to our work on this committee involve how do we keep warm in the winter? How do we know that we're going to all be warm, and recognizing some of us are not warm every night, but for those who normally are, it was a dose of wow, this is like a basic thing that for most time you would think we would know how to keep warm, but we had to scramble and figure things out. And one big lesson for me was about how dependent our heat is on an electrical grid that's. If it can be out for 3 or 4 days, I know the storm is not a normal storm, but we can expect more storms like that, I think. And the question of the utility company Central Hudson's role in whether how quickly power could be restored given the scenario. So just to not rehash everything in that email, but again, my concern is how do we know we have to get off fossil fuels for the most part for various reasons, and how do we, if electric is the way to go, how do we make that reliable? And if that's not, like, what else? I'd love for our committee to explore what really is going to meet our basic needs in the way that serves seven generations, let's say.
I would like to suggest that I had an aha moment. Rosendale was one of the warming centers, and we have solar, but what we don't have yet is battery storage. And I think that for all of the warming centers, and in the summer they would be cooling centers, but places where people go for shelter in an emergency should be priority. And also first responders should be priority for basically microgrids, where the solar generates the electricity. And that happens every day. Sometimes it's more electricity. Sometimes it's a little less depending on the weather. But even year round, solar works. And but it does need a battery backup system so that it works 24/7. And I just want to say that I did a deep energy retrofit on my house, and it stayed warm for several days after a while because it was so bitter cold. But even more important, and everyone knows what a promoter I am of renewable energy, but even more important is these building retrofits. And I know that there's a program coming through ARPA and so forth. And I also just want to say that every time we are switching over by either doing a building retrofit or installing solar or installing battery storage, those are training opportunities. And we have a wonderful, very active Department of Employment and Training that have been coordinating kind of a green career pathway. But for a lot of these ARPA projects, where there are building retrofits, I hope that we can see that as a training opportunity as well. It's been on my mind. So, yes, please.
I just want to second some of your points. And I do think, to answer your question, I think building codes that require solar and battery backup in the future on new construction is going to be a key to getting us there and ensuring that everybody stays warm even if the power's out. Because, yes, even in the winter, solar works. And if you have, you know, battery storage is getting better and better. And I think in the next few years, it'll get to the point to where you'll be able to store days worth of, you know, electricity and hopefully keep everybody warm and also just help get everybody or get as many as we can off the grid generally. So.
Okay, we have one last under old business. Let's see, the Climate Smart Committee meets. I think we have a full complement, and I want to thank Legislator Stewart for agreeing to serve from Public Works. And we're doing a lot of different things, and it's a really excellent network, as well as an opportunity to brainstorm about things that the county can do. And I think I did mention that we're working with the Ulster County Fair, as is Department of Environment, and hopefully the UCRA will as well. Anything else at this hour? I have all kinds of notes and things circled, but I do know the one thing I did also want to bring up is refrigerant management. I had a constituent let me know that they went to, because they did an energy retrofit and installed air source heat pumps in that case, they didn't need their air conditioners anymore. So they were old, and apparently the program that Central Hudson had to take them back and actually pay and then properly remove the Freon, they said that that program no longer has funding. And I have to look into that. But they took it, they went on the website and found the first place on the website and went and tried to deliver their two air conditioners. And the employee that was taking them took the money, I think it was $5 each, and then the person, because the person didn't speak English, just pantomimed, you know, be sure you take out the Freon or whatever refrigerant was in there. And the employee said no and indicated that they just cut the line. that means we have to go back to the DEC, and it's really the DEC's job to enforce. I don't believe that's, you know, would come under compliance or enforcement from the county. I think that's really DEC, but it's pretty serious because the older ones release freon, and then the newer ones release greenhouse gas materials that are very high in greenhouse gas. Okay, that was the last thing I had on my mind, and it's late, and I appreciate everybody's time, attention, and good thinking. Any last minute words?
Can I just be a yes on the minutes? That's the only thing did I miss the minutes?
Oh, thank you. No. Excellent. Yes. Okay. And with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second.
A motion by Legislator Maloney, seconded by Legislator Erner. All in favor, please signify. And aye. Thank you all for seeing this through. It's been a long night. Okay.
All right. Thank you, folks. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.